show is a proud member of Friends in Tech at friendsintech.com.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Your commander is on deck.
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. This is the show for... wait for it. April 14th, right before Tax Day. This is your first time listening to Technorama. Thanks for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. Something like that. I'm Craig Stepp, and with me tonight is not Chuck Tomasi, but a special guest from my old high school friends, Fred Smith. Say hello, Fred.
Hello, Fred. Like you didn't expect that.
I didn't expect that. Wow, what witty humor. But I thought I'd bring Fred on here because, we recently just caught back up through the magic of social engineering on Facebook. And we have a lot of old school stories to talk about. And I know Fred's an old tech guy. He's still a tech guy today, I guess. I guess you still got your geek card.
I do. I have a geek card. I have a couple geek cards, actually. One's a gold geek card. And then I have a standard
one?
Yeah, then I have the standard platinum geek card.
You print those yourself?
I do. Don't tell anybody.
Yeah.
It's our secret.
So anyway, Fred, people know, at least my listeners know about me a little bit, but tell everybody about you. What do you do now and, about yourself a little bit?
Wow, what about me? Well, first of all, I want to say that, we went to junior high and high school together. And then after, high school, life took over both of us and we did our own thing. And both of us have always been computers, from the Commodore 64, even before that. But I think where we kind of got together was the Commodore 64 years and later. But after high school, I jumped into computers directly, actually. So if you remember Sears Business Center, have you ever heard of them? Sears Business Center.
I worked there. Remember?
Oh my God, you're right. You're right. Sorry about that. Let me just. What's your name again?
Here, I'm gonna show you my geek card.
You're right. You did work there. Didn't you? Was it after I left, or was it? What was I? When was that? Because
Actually, I started there.
Go ahead.
Well, it was the summer right after high school in '87, and I started working in the shipping and receiving. And you were actually there, putting together what PS2s or whatever. The old IBM ATs and such, because those were phased out while I was there. I remember that.
Right. Because I started out in shipping and receiving, with them. My mom and I actually worked there, and they needed somebody in shipping and receiving, and that was kind of my in to, official business PCs and whatnot. And that's where I kind of got my exposure, my initial exposure with a broad range of PCs. And that was the IBMs, the Compaqs, some Macs. They had the Lisa there for a little while. And
they did?
So, yeah, they had the Lisa. I remember when that first came out. I played with it a little bit. But that's kind of where I got my feet wet with just, general PCs. And before that, of course, we did the Commodore 64 and Amiga and the 128 and whatnot. But I guess I worked about 5 years and went to a local company here in Charlotte called Software City. And as a franchise, I believe, worked there in the evenings. And during the day, I worked at a company called NBC Computer Service, and basically I was just a tech. I ran service calls. I did repaired printers and monitors and things like that, and that was pretty fun. Did that for about a year. Had an opportunity to get into Microsoft, and had a couple friends that had got hired there, and they turned my resume in, and long story short, I got an interview and got hired and worked there from 91 to 2003. So.
And when you left, they gave you a gold mop, right?
Yeah, dude, I have the and I know the listeners can't see this, but the 5-year clock that I got from 5 years. This is with appreciation on your 5th anniversary with Microsoft, October 1996, and the back fell off of it a couple of times.
crashed.
It did. It crashed.
That's funny.
I think it had. I think it was running Windows ME, but. So, had a great time at Microsoft, stayed in the operating system support line. It started out with, DOS support. Let's see what I do. I did DOS.
I remember me and you talked about that a little bit because I went over there a few times when you were working and or it was after hours or something, but you were talking about how the training and how they would muck up a DOS install, and you had to try and figure a way how to fix it, with some rudimentary tools or something, or something weird like that.
Yeah. Yeah. They, each new hire would go through, training, new hire training basically. And what they would do is, amongst telling you how a PC works and, giving you some basic level, basic computer knowledge, they would bring in lab machines, and they break them on purpose, and you had to figure out what was broken, which was kind of cool because it was a challenge. That was pretty fun, and stayed with the operating systems, went through the Windows 4 groups, they have code names for every all their products.
What was the code name for? What are you talking about? Which one?
Windows for Workgroups, I think, was Spartan or Sparta. I think it was Spartan.
That sounds familiar.
I could be wrong about that. Yeah. Basically, sticking with the operating systems. I mean, I had opportunities to support Word and, some of the Office products, and I really didn't want to do that because I felt it was too limiting. I thought operating systems were really where it was at. And because you touched so many different things and had to deal with so many different types of hardware and I kind of got really good at working with hardware, and that was really cool because there was so much to play with. I mean, there was all kinds of new equipment around there, and you really felt like you were on the cutting edge. But after Windows for Workgroups, they started doing the NT beta, and I got into NT, started the beta there, and went through and stayed in NT basically throughout the rest of my career there. And after working with the NT product, they had a group that basically was an alliance group or a group dedicated to corporate support, and they would sell contracts to corporations and whatever they were, Fortune 500 companies, whatnot, and they would assign techs, and whether it was a SQL tech or Exchange or whatever, and I was typically, depending on the company, I would do the Windows stuff. And I actually got into cluster server, which was kind of cool, and I supported cluster server for a while as well. That was pretty fun. So,
are you doing the air quotes? A cluster?
Yeah. No. Exactly. And in the beginning, it was such that it was a cluster. It was just amazing. Just the fact that it worked.
Bet.
So, but it was good. And then, I kind of got burnt out on the corporate, end of things. I was in the financial services group. So I deal with a lot of banks, and when I would go on site to work on issues, there was a lot of meetings, and that's all good, well and good. And some people just love that kind of stuff. And I think over time I just got burnt out. So I decided to, pursue other interests, and in doing so, kind of brings me closer to date of what's going on right now, and started a business with a partner of mine, kind of an IT consulting business and mm-hmm. small business. Mainly, we work with small businesses, and it's fun. You know, I can take the ideas and concepts and skills that I've learned through with Microsoft, working with larger corporations, and kind of scale them down and apply them to smaller businesses. So it's pretty fun.
Yeah. Well, that has some advantages when you work for yourself, too.
Oh, absolutely. You can kind of get up whenever you want to. That's.
Oh, I had an appointment at 9. It's 10:30.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. Not I quite. Guess you need to be responsible.
What's that?
I said, I guess you need to be responsible at some level, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Especially when you're dealing with contract customers. They have some expectations. But what you typically do, though, is set your appointments for later in the day. Mm-hmm. Unless you just have to have a morning appointment, it's nice to, get up at 8 or 9.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's fun. It's interesting too, Craig, because when you work for yourself and, there's probably plenty of people out there that listen to this that do, but it's hard to think about going back and working for somebody else.
Oh, I bet.
It's a lot of freedom, a lot of fun. And you can, you get your head around everything, you control things, and yeah, it's really cool.
Well, let's go back in time a little bit.
Yep.
Okay, now, when me and you started hanging out, we had a mutual friend, Mark, and he was in the Commodore, mm-hmm. and that's kind of how, me and you knew each other from school some, but Mark kind of, roped us into each other. But I remember you used to really be big into the Trash 80 stuff.
Yeah, that's interesting because if it wasn't for my dad, I probably would never have, even seen a Trash 80, TRS-80. he worked at Radio Shack, was an assistant manager at a local Radio Shack, and I would go over there after school or, if I was if it was a holiday for me, go over there. And what attracted me to computers, honestly, is games. Mm-hmm. I can remember. And this is when games were on cassettes,
Oh, I'm hurting already.
Yeah, yeah. These were at least they're not punch cards. Okay, we don't go quite far that far back, but
no, but Chuck does, and you should hear him talk about those.
Games attracted me. They had there was a couple games that stood out in my mind. Now when I go back and think about they were all text adventure games or. And basically,
Zork.
You were presented with a description, and you could put in a command, and the computer would respond to that command. Basically, mm-hmm. I think the games in question were Bedlam. There was one called Pyramid, and then the famous or infamous Zork.
Of course,
So you would you'd be presented with a description of a room. You type north, south, east, west, and you'd solve puzzles. And that really, for me, drew me in because I had to use your imagination. You just created all these, visuals in your mind of what you were doing, and where you were going. And I'd find myself dreaming about it. Not terribly, I would obsess on it, but it was fun because I always looked forward to it. So finally.
Fred, go to the chalkboard. Wake up.
Yeah,
exactly. Daydreaming.
Exactly. He keeps bumping into the wall, saying something about a scepter and a blue sword.
Somebody grew coming to get him.
Exactly. It was, that really kind of drew me in. And then my dad saw the interest and got me a TRS-80 mm-hmm. Model 3 for Christmas.
Well, see, everybody calls it the Trash 80, but, it really wasn't that bad,
Oh, no.
Affectionate name.
Yeah, for what it was and what it did.
Mm-hmm. I want to tell you, though, it's funny because sound like you were more interested in playing the games, and that got you interested in computers, right?
Yeah, and that drew me into more stuff. I mean, not only did I just want to play the game, I think a lot of kids these days just want to pick up a joystick or a controller, pop a disc in and just play. But you really mm-hmm. had to know how the machine operated at certain fundamental levels to play these games. I mean, you just couldn't mm-hmm. stick a tape in and turn the machine on and all of a sudden it would start working. So you really had to kind of learn the basic DOS commands. And this was TRS or TrisDOS, TRS-DOS.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I played around with it. That got me interested in learning how the computer worked. So it was, games drew me into PCs, but ultimately I wanted to know more about how they worked, and mm-hmm. did a little bit of basic programming and stuff like that on it too.
Yeah, and see, that's what I was getting at was, on the flip side, that's kind of the – games got me interested in computers too, but for a little different reason. I'm not really so much of a gamer, like playing games and stuff, as much as when we started out, I wanted to make games.
Right.
It fascinated me how these things work, how Infocom had their Z engine where it would understand – it would parse your sentences and kind of figure out what you were saying on – it was amazing to me. And I actually, me and Craig Watson, remember Craig Watson?
I do.
Yeah, me and Craig were trying, well, actually, I started building an interpreter, and we kind of worked on it a little bit together and got it to where it would break up the sentences, and we could do some things. But of course, I didn't have the corporate bank behind me to bankroll my endeavor. But that's kind of the reason why I got into it too, but just for a different angle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and the rest is history, really. But it just was a fascinating time. You know, you think back and go, oh, the good old days, you know, when things mm-hmm. were simpler. And, you know, it seems like now, you know, the PCs are so sophisticated, and the graphics, and there's not a lot to the imagination anymore. But at the same time, you know, without the games, for me anyway, without the interest in – it was more of interest in adventure. You know, what's mm-hmm. around the next corner? And I've always kind of been like that, you know, you know, what's behind the door kind of thing. And
kind of like life.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, it's been pretty good. I mean, they realized the TRS-80 was a, you know, black and white, you know, it was monochrome screen. Mm-hmm. And I started seeing the app. Some of my friends at school, you know, they have the Apple IIc. And, you know, it was color. And I remember a guy named Chris, I think it was at Northwestern, and he was in a band. But, it, you know, we went over to his house, and he was playing Wizardry, which was a very rudimentary graphics adventure, kind of a similar.
I think I remember that.
Yeah, Wizardry. There's several Wizardry games that came out. And mm-hmm. You know, it was like, wow, he's so lucky, you know. And eventually – I think you guys had Commodore 64s. So what was your first PC, actually?
That was it. At school, my math teacher, her name's on the tip of my tongue, but she knew I was interested in programming, and she thought I was like, she was like trying to foster some genius. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'd finished my work, and she, you can go around the partition and work on the computer. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'd go over there and, you know, do code and stuff, but it was on the Apple IIe,
right?
Which was, you know, those were everywhere in schools. But the Commodore was the first one I got for Christmas.
Yeah, and I remember you had one, and then I think Mark had one, mm-hmm. and I didn't have one. I had the TRS-80 still, and we were playing Zork, or I think I was into it pretty hard, and you know, Zork 1, 2, and 3, and couldn't wait to mail order. I mean, I couldn't wait till they came in the mail. Got home from school, you know, Zork 2's here, you know. Yeah. And then my
see you next year, Fred.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. But I wanted the Commodore next, and what I eventually ended up doing is, instead of getting the 64, I went and got the 128.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you won up this.
Yeah, well, you know, I thought, oh, you know, this is, it could use much more, you know, and
show those jerks. They all got 64. I'll go,
yeah, one
double.
Double it. Show them. I got 64 more than you do. Yeah. And so that was cool, but really I just used it in mainly 64 mode. I mean, they had, you know, you had CPM, and that was kind of cool. The graphics were a little better. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I really just kind of kept playing the games on it, and mainly it was, you know, for the you know, on the 64 side, rather. So, but that was fun. And then, you know, entered the Amiga. I had the Amiga next.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a pretty awesome machine. The Amiga 500, of course, the 1000 was out, and based on the Motorola processor, 6800, I believe. That to me, the graphics, and, you know, it did multitasking. You could format a floppy. I mean, really, to me, it was like one of the first multitasking OSs.
Oh yeah, it was awesome. It was a fantastic computer. I had one later on.
Yep.
It somehow, I got my whole. How did I get my hands on it? I don't remember. But I had one, and we did some stuff with it. But yeah, it was awesome machine, especially with the video toaster. Did you ever have one of those?
I didn't have the video toaster. I wanted one, but I could never really,
who didn't?
Afford it. Yeah. but that kind of stuff was pretty fascinating to me too. The video mm-hmm. aspects of it, because it was great for that. I mean, I remember, I don't know if they do it anymore, but I'm probably 5, 6, maybe 8 years ago at least. I remember seeing, they used to use the Commodore 64s for the TV guides or the channel guides. Because every once in a while, and I don't know if it was, I think it was up here, or at least it was, maybe it was in Rock Hill, maybe it was more in Rock Hill, but I would mm-hmm. see a crash because the Commodore or the Amiga would crash. It would have the Guru Meditation error, which was the failure screen.
I remember seeing that too. I flipped the screen one time and I was like, what, wait a minute.
Yeah. And nobody else had that
Amiga
error,
hooked up to my TV.
That was the first, quote unquote blue screen,
Guru meditation
error, which was, you knew it was a Commodore, if you had one, you knew it.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the Commodore, went to, the IBM side, the evil IBM side, the dark side.
And that whole, I actually really like the IBM style, and even today you still get a lot of that. Standards that were set
with
the AT and the XT, even a little bit with XT, but especially drive bay size, and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And just the way things were laid out, cards, still got mm-hmm. cards, and those were the same for a long time, for those PS2s. Those were just weird machines.
Yeah, the PS2s were weird. I mean, they actually, when we got some PS2s in, when we were looking at the Sears Business Center, I mean, they were pretty cool machines, and they were modular, and they would pop apart without really tools, and they mm-hmm. they introduced the microchannel architecture on those for their buses, which is great. They pick something that nobody used,
they went from the standard they made to something else, and it didn't quite ever fly.
Yeah, well, Compaq, started with came out with they chose to go the ESA architecture, mm-hmm. and that kind of won out because it was backward compatible. Yep.
Yeah, I remember the card slots were huge.
Oh, yeah, they were immense. Like, you could put a piece of toast in there.
Yeah. What I hated about the PS2s is you had to boot up on that floppy to configure it.
Yeah.
If you didn't have the floppy, then, you hope you knew somebody that had one.
Oh, yeah. Now, do you remember, there's a tool I used to use a lot to create a little trivia for you, to create autoexec.bat files and config.sys files. You remember the tool I used to use for that at DOS, in the DOS prompt?
Your five fingers?
No, there's a tool you'd run, and you could configure, edit the autoexec and config sys files.
CopyCon?
No.
Are you talking about something that would automate it, you mean?
Yeah, well, no, it's not so much automated. It's more of a command line tool, but it brought mm-hmm. you into it lets you edit the file and move around the different lines, and a very manual program, but it wasn't just a text editor. It was called Edlin.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. Edlin. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yep.
Well, I told people that, when I was configuring so many machines over at People's Computer Warehouse,
mm-hmm.
that I got to where if you were to gauge my typing speed by me running copy command or CopyCon, autoexec.bat, and do the config.sys all by hand.
Right.
My words per minute were probably like 300.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I could just touch the keyboard and almost make it happen.
Yeah. Oh, I know. So,
Hey, well, I want to tell everybody, I mentioned this on the show a couple of times that, you were the first person I ever pranked on a cell phone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. When, I was over at People's, People's Computer Warehouse was right around the corner from Sears Business Center.
Right.
And me and Fred go to lunch pretty often. And I would, one day, I think you drove and my car was broken or something. And I borrowed Jeff's car to go to lunch, my manager. We had this car phone, that's mounted on the dash. We had one of those Lincoln cars, the 80s version.
Right.
So I'm riding out, I go to get in his car and he's got a phone. And I thought, well, I will call Fred right when I'm in the parking lot of Sears and then tell him I'll be over there in about, in a little bit. And I just walk in the door, and it worked. You were like, what?
Exactly. Yeah.
That was fun.
It worked. it worked. You didn't even have the concept. I mean, do you remember when you first got a cell phone? How long ago?
Yeah, it was a big brick.
Yeah, how big it was.
Yeah, that was amazing. I think the first one I actually had was that Motorola, looked like a pyramid almost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a little flip phone.
Yeah, yeah.
Those were, it actually worked pretty well with the little flimsy plastic antenna.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they actually worked pretty well. I actually used it a little too much because it was too, worked too well.
Right. Yeah, haven't things changed, though? I mean, things have just changed so much.
Mm-hmm.
From we were going up and... Yeah, so I got that going for me.
Well, good for you. You know, I was thinking, we were talking about Sears Business Center. Mm-hmm. When I worked there in shipping and receiving. I remember my biggest stand that I ever took. You may have been there. I can't remember. But remember Barry, the sales guy?
Barry Wade, yep.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, I got the word.
Oh, go ahead. Huh? Go ahead. I'll tell you something about Barry when you're done.
Okay. Well, I got the word from our manager that the salespeople can't take merchandise out the front door anymore.
Right.
So I was told they have to take it out back. So, and that was the word that was laid down, not just to me, but everybody knew that. Mm-hmm. So, that, you know, the salespeople, I'm sure my listeners are familiar with salespeople. Well, he had his own mind how he's going to do. I'm going to take in the, you know, he's got big customers. He's actually the biggest, I think, salesperson in the store, or at least for numbers, at least. And he went to take some stuff out the door. I would not let him take it out front. And he would just, he was pitching a, you know what?
Yeah.
I mean, was all I could do. I was like, and then I ended up, it was like, Frodo taking the ring to Mordor, you know. I had salespeople behind me. Everybody was backing me up. Barry, just take it out the back door. You know, that was, oh man, that was a day.
Yeah. Well, he, I remember him for sure, and he was always kind of a character.
He was your typical yuppie kind of guy. He had drove the BMW.
Oh, yeah.
Big sales guy. Yep. Did whatever the customer, you know, was going to ask him to do.
Well, there was a news story a couple years ago, I think, where there was a guy driving through downtown sideswiping cars and ended up hitting an overpass, embutment, or basically a column, really,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, dying. And
wow.
That was old Barry.
Was it?
Yep, that was Barry. He, something was going on. You know, he was always kind of a shady character, honestly. And he had been involved in several, what would you call them? Scams after, mm-hmm. after Sears Business Center. And, probably something caught up to him. And, Yeah, he's no longer with us.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I almost feel bad talking about him now.
Oh, I know. Well, you know, I don't know how much of a good guy he was, but, you know, you could almost tell that something like that eventually was going to happen to him. So, yeah.
But, well, he's the kind of guy I got the impression, you know, there was times when he was cool with me.
Yeah.
But looking back on it, he was probably just, butter me up to get me to do something for him.
Oh yeah.
You know, take this out or do this, or can you not sign this until later or something? I don't know.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. It was always kind of weird.
Yep. Yeah. Who else do you remember from there?
Keith. Remember Keith?
Oh, Keith. Yep. Keith Coe. Yep.
Yeah. I catch up. I've seen him a few times around town, over the years, but I haven't seen him in a while,
yeah.
But yeah, he looked pretty good.
Yeah. Funny story about, Keith.
Wait a minute. Keith is a funny story.
Yeah, he is. I didn't talk about a character. We touch base every once in a while, and I haven't probably talked to him in probably eight months or so. But
oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we would keep in touch once in a while. But me and a buddy of mine, well, my partner, my current business partner, we were going to go over to his place, and we were driving down the road, and I think he was heading home or something. We're going to meet him there. But and I don't think I was in a different truck. My car was in the shop, so I was in a different vehicle, not one he would know.
Mm-hmm.
And pulled up beside him, and turned into his complex, and you know, I was honking the horn, and he didn't look over, and I was honking the horn, and I said, you know, I started to kind of yell at him a little bit, not anything vulgar, but you know, like, hey, buddy, you know, and just really kind of
shake your fist in the air.
Yeah, trying to, you know, trying to get his attention and freak him out at that point. And he just never looked over, like, you know, I don't know. And he heard us. And so he pulled off, and then I got in behind him and and followed him, of course, all the way to where he was parking. And he got out, and he had this – he looked like – I mean, he was white as a sheet. I guess he thought that we were going to jump out and roll him or something.
That
poor guy. But we took – I took advantage of it. I'm okay. I've got a sick sense of humor. I egged it on a little bit, so but that was funny. He had no clue it was us. And
I thought you were going to say he jumped out of the car and threw some rounds at you.
Yeah, well, we put him in the hospital, but that, you know.
Oh, man. No, he was always cool with me. I remember seeing him out around town somewhere, and he's like, "Can I buy you a drink?" And we sat there and had a drink one time.
Okay. Yeah, good guy.
Yeah, very good guy.
Good guy.
Is he on Facebook, too? Everybody's on Facebook.
I don't know. He hadn't hated it, actually, when we were hanging out once in a while. He really didn't have a good computer, you know. He was more of a sales guy. He didn't really care so much about technology. He just cared about selling.
Making money.
Yeah, exactly. So he wasn't.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Oh, no. You gotta sell and make money, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, but I had some good times there. When I worked there for like a couple years, a year and a half, something like that.
Yep.
Wasn't too bad.
That wasn't bad.
And People's Computer Warehouse, let me tell you, that was just a... Not a nightmare. It was just there was one thing after another. We had techs come in, and I was the only tech there for, you know, as long as I was there.
Right.
And Jeff tried to hire somebody and come in, and the guy's like, "Yeah, I want to learn. It's okay. First day, he's like, "Okay, you want to learn? I know this is simple, but please take this monitor out there and just plug it up to one of the computers on the." On the sales floor, and just make sure it comes on. It was like just a VGA monitor.
Right.
Well, he goes, "All right, sure." And, you know, a VGA cable, you can't really plug it in anywhere else in the back of a computer.
No.
Well, right?
Yeah. Well, shouldn't be able to.
Shouldn't be able to. So he's gone. I'm like, I'm busy. And I was like, you know, I think it's been like an hour. So I went looking. He's not around. He told Jeff he couldn't handle it and he left.
Yeah, I figured you'd find it, you know, find the monitor hanging from the fluorescent light or something, you know.
Just it's on the top of a shelf. What the
hell? Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. But yeah, we had a couple of people just, I don't know what they were doing. And then, you know, later on, he called back wanting his $14 for the couple hours he was in the office.
Right. Yeah, good luck.
Pay him out of petty cash.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, that was an interesting place, too.
Well, I think people get intimidated, you know. Because to us, I mean, it's pretty – everything's – well, most things are pretty simple when it comes to PCs. And, you know, we understand how they operate. We get it. But, you know, for a lot of people that haven't been doing it like we have, you know, they just get overwhelmed in their head. They don't use reason and logic typically. They don't say, "Oh, yeah, this only fits one way." They're just looking at it like a cable plugs into this box. Oh, my God. What do I do? You know?
Yeah. Well, and I've tried to tell people other techs, you know, and stuff, and you know, you got to be patient because you know, you're in this job, you're relating to the public for the first thing. Second of all, these are doctors and attorneys or, you know, Joe Blow construction guy. He's just bringing his computer in cause it's not working.
Right.
You know, and people, you know, you've seen them catch an attitude like, "Oh, God, you know, I got to fix, you know, he didn't know how to do this," but you got to remember, where, you know, they're on a different level. They're doing other things other than what you're doing.
Oh, yeah. And I think if anything, if you're a good tech, whether that's, you know, just working with PCs and being in the back or you know, doing some customer service, the one thing you have to have, the one quality you must possess is patience. I mean, you know, and I've got friends, you know, or even my partner, you know, he's a good guy and everything, but he just doesn't understand how I can sit there and stare at a screen and just watch it, waiting for something to pop up, you know, a dialogue box or whatever, because I know that, well, the system's doing some processing and it's going to take a minute. And, you know, when it doesn't just – I haven't clicked on the icon 15 times to run a program because I know that it's eventually going to load. And I have a time limit. You know, if it goes 3-4 minutes and nothing happens, I typically will, you know, oh, maybe I didn't click it. But you know what I'm saying?
My patience with XP is pretty low.
Yeah, I know. I know. Trust me. I supported it.
Yeah,
but you know, right now though, I mean, it's you know, people look at XP and say, "Gosh, you know, let's keep XP forever." And you know,
it's so much better than Vista.
Yeah, forget Vista. And hopefully, Windows 7 will change a lot of that. Had some time to.
I'll be honest with you. I am kind of looking forward to 7, but XP is okay. To be honest with you, just like Windows 98, used it for so long, I'm just tired of looking at the same desktop.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And something different, you know, and then XP comes along. Then we've had it for umpteen years. I'm like, I'm sick of looking at the stupid, you know, and I think Windows 7 is a somewhat of a departure, but.
Well, I mean, it's Vista, but it's, you know, they did things. They took a lot of, you know, Microsoft listened to feedback from Vista. And, you know, the big annoyance was the user access control in Vista. Mm-hmm. It is an annoyance. And most people just end up turning it off. But in Windows 7, there are different levels of annoyance. You can have the, mildly annoying pop-up when you just want to run a program to the, you know, moderately annoying to the, you know, Vista annoying. So at least you can change that around, and they've changed some things in the interface, and there's a list of changes, and people can go up on Microsoft's website to check those out. But I'm excited about it. I think it's going to be what Vista should have been, and you're going to have to go to it eventually because it's kind of married to Server 2008. You know, they're really designed to work together very well, and so it's just a natural progression.
Well, I'll tell you, for Vista, the biggest gripe I had, it wasn't actually with the OS as much as when they were pushing the OS, they were selling it, you know, before they actually released it, they kept talking about touting the features. And what was the number one feature they kept harping on was Aereo. Yeah. I was like, so? I don't care about Aereo. I want to see the rest of the if it, OS works like it's supposed to, but that was their number one feature, Aereo. I'm like, whatever, you know? Well, I mean, not trying to bring the Linux.
Yeah.
Thing in there, but Linux has had some really cool looking desktops for a long time. Sure. Mac has too.
Oh no, yeah.
And Aereo, come on.
Yeah, well, yeah, you're right. I think, you know, Microsoft was like, hey, we look like the other guys now. You know, look at us. And really, the only, you know, there's the switch between Windows kind of a feature that you can click a little button and see these kind of windows scroll back in the middle of the screen. I mean, who uses that? I mean, that's the only kind of cool thing.
Yeah, that was the other thing. It was like Aereo and every commercial you saw, they showed the little shuffling windows. I'm like,
I mean, nobody uses it. If they do, you know, they got low expectations. I mean, so hopefully Windows 7 will be better and looking forward to that. So.
Mm-hmm. So I want to tell you, you know, when like you were talking about earlier about working at Microsoft, one of the first times I really saw a network game was we were there after hours and we were walking through and you acted like it was no big deal. These guys had Descent and they all had headsets and they all interconferenced each other on the phone system. And they're, of course, spread out over the building and they're all playing Descent or Descent 2 or one of them. And I was like, well, this is pretty cool. I got to check this out. And you're just like, eh, whatever.
we've been doing it for so long. It was Descent. Yeah. And then Descent 2, we didn't really get into that too much. But Descent, the first one was huge as far as the.
It was a cool game.
Yeah. I mean, it was great. And really, even before that, and a quick story, I don't know how much more time we have, but, you know.
Hours and hours.
Yeah, hours and hours. Just keep talking because it's going to be edited anyway. Edited 4 hours down to 15 minutes. All right. One of the first networking games that was out, basically, was – I say one of the first. I mean the 3D first-person shooter, basically, was Doom. If you remember Doom or not – I mean, how could you
– If I remember Doom or not.
How could you, I'm thinking, what am I, idiot? You know, you should know Doom.
I've just been reading it backwards. It was Mood.
Oh, yeah. Well, you had to be in the right mood to play Doom. So this was you, I think when Doom first came out, it wasn't networkable, and I'd have to check.
They tacked it on later, didn't they?
They did.
It
was
Yep.
And they used IPX SPX, and and I believe they broadcast.
Oh my god! I haven't given IPX a thought in years.
I think I'd have to check it out because they broadcasted the packets as opposed to. Directed to the specific client. I remember it was a buddy of mine we were playing Doom on the corporate network, on the corporate net. And that wasn't really – there wasn't a lot of corporate network playing at the time. You know, not a lot of people were using the corporate network to play games on, and Doom was one of the first ones. And so we're – you know, we're, I think it's probably about 7 or 8 o'clock at night, you know, Eastern Standard Time, and we're playing Doom. And all of a sudden, you know, we lose connectivity. We have no connection to the network at all. And – wondering what's going on, and the phone rings in my cube, and they somebody apparently somebody from NetOps, a corporate, was like, "What are you doing on the network?"
Nothing.
testing. You know,
sorry, woke me up. What?
Yeah. So basically, what had happened was, you know, we were sending out so many IPX SPX packets that they had to shut the taps down. You know, in that floor. So we didn't get in trouble, but it was a slap in the face, basically, like, oh, maybe we shouldn't be doing this.
Because that was a broadcast protocol. It was one of those things that goes to the router and just, you know, spreads it out everywhere. So you'd end up with like a network storm.
Yeah. And so
anyway, a network perfect storm.
Yep. So we used hubs after that. But then they fixed it. And then, of course, because everybody was playing Doom, and you know, the ID was like, okay, we got to fix it for all these corporate people because they're playing it on their corporate networks. So we got to make it less chatty. So they did that, and then we could play it again on the corporate net. And man, I tell you what, I wasted so much of my life playing that game. You know, I'm afraid they're going to add it up when I pass on. They're going to say, "Mr. Smith, you spent, you know."
Yeah, on your tombstone, I'm going to say, "Game over, bud."
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Game over, man.
Yep.
So, well, you know, when Virtual One, you never came down there and saw the network. It wasn't, I wouldn't say great. It wasn't a fantastic looking network, but we had a solid T1 coming to our office, and you know, there's some modem users on there, obviously not using up all that bandwidth. So we played Quake, was it Quake 2, I think, all night. I mean, it was like 3:30 in the morning.
Right.
One more round, you know.
Oh yeah.
You know, the ping times were low. It was fun. That was total blast.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I love games. I mean I still play games today. I mean, I haven't played many network games, but you know, I'll certainly sit down to a nice session of Fallout 3 or you know, BioShock or something like that. I like the games that you have to think and take a long time to play. And again, suck up more of your life.
What you have of it.
So,
you remember, I may have told you this the other night. I can't remember, but there was a game called Viper Racing. Do you remember that?
I do, and I have a copy of that, and I'm actually looking at it right now.
Do you really?
Yeah, the CD case for Viper Racing.
It was the physics on it were awesome.
Oh, yeah. You know,
we were playing that on the network just against each other.
Yeah.
I don't know if it had network play or not, servers and all that kind of stuff. It was like local network stuff. So anyway, we're playing and I'm beating the crap out of the guy on the other computer. And they decide they're going to tweak their car and they're going to beat me.
Right.
So they start tweaking it. And I bet they spent an hour tweaking the stupid car, buying this, putting this on there, and you know, make this shock a little bit more, this, that, another. So when they got done, they were like, "All right, we're ready." I said, "Okay, give me just a second." So I went through the hidden network share and grabbed their settings and restarted, put them on my machine and restarted mine. We had even cards.
Exactly, because you knew how to do it. Yeah, that's awesome. I was gonna ask you, because I don't know how much time we got, but I was gonna ask you about
a few more minutes.
Yeah, that's cool. Did you ever get into? And of course, now we wouldn't do it because it's morally questionable. But any kind of hacking or freaking or because that was, I know I kind of had a phase there where, you know, and it wasn't anything deep. It was just kind of a interesting thing with war dialing. You know, you get the, even as far back as when I had the TRS-80 Model 3, you know, with the 300 baud modem, and you know, we get this little program to dial numbers, you know. And
well, I have a couple of stories, but I'd rather share those off the air.
Well, I was kind of talking about clean, you know, kind of fun.
No, that's fine. No, I'm just kidding.
No, you're not. But that's okay. I tell you, a time I hacked into a Hardee's.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Wait, I remember you showed me that.
Yeah, I did.
You could. It had like a screen, and it had like temperature.
Yep.
And a couple other things, and lights on and off, I think.
Yeah, basic, you know, basic menu system, just, you know, control certain functions in the store.
Yeah, text only. Yep. It was like a text screen. Yeah, yeah, I remember that.
Yep. And just a simple, you know, dialed up and, you know, got a list of numbers. And after I got home from school, I looked them up and, you know, tried to connect to the ones that thought they were computers. And, you know, all of a sudden, Hardy's number 27, you know, on the screen. Yeah. I go, oh, okay.
I totally remember that. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yes, I forgot about that.
Yeah. I didn't do anything malicious. I mean, you know, I didn't want to mess the store up.
Flipping the lights
up.
On and off in the Hardee's.
Well, de-thaw the freezer, you know, hey, come in the burgers.
These fries are taking forever to cook. Oh, that turned off.
Exactly. But, yeah, that was the – that's probably the worst thing I ever did that way, as far as not even when it was bad. It was just the fact that I, you know, got into a system I wasn't supposed to be in. But I never changed anything. So
yeah,
but it was fun.
I was just thinking of some bulletin board stuff.
Well, you and Mark were pretty heavy in the bulletin board stuff, I think.
Yeah, actually, I wrote one for the Commodore.
Yeah, yeah. What was it called?
Clipboard.
Okay. Yeah. Because
I was trying to think of a cool name for it, you know, and I'm like, there's a clipboard sitting right there. I think I've even still got the same stupid clipboard, but I made the menu system look like little, you know, ASCII characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had a clipboard, you know, from the top, the whole menu.
Yep. I think you should have wrote it.
Yeah. Well, I had it running for a little while, but you know, it's hard to have a bulletin board when your number's not published anywhere.
Yeah. Nobody's
like that. It's not like the internet, something you can just stumble upon it, except for you and your war dollar.
Yeah, well, that was just fun, you know. But no, you guys, well, you kind of went into the programming aspect of it a little bit more than I did. I just think I just, you know, stayed more with just playing games. And I did some programming. I remember in I think it was high school, the computer class. And I had to leave Northwestern because the assistant principal found out that I didn't live in the direct area because we had moved. And so I couldn't go my senior year to the high school I'd been going to. You know,
is that what happened?
Yeah, remember Rawson Road was right there, so went there, you know, and then go to Northwestern right next door, you know, and have all the friends. And okay, I'm in 11th grade, and you know, there was something about buses going on, and the assistant principal was standing there and asked me what bus I was on, and I don't know how it all worked out, but basically it was like, you're not supposed to be here, and I'm like, huh? I mean, 11th grade was almost over. You know,
it's like some 80s movie.
Yeah.
Finally getting my revenge, getting rid of that Fred Smith.
Yeah, finally. So I had to go to Rock Hill High.
Well, I didn't know the particulars of it, but I knew that something that was what happened is that you had to leave or something.
Well, there was a witness protection program thing too, but that's another story.
And now you're sitting there podcasting.
Exactly. No, but seriously, I mean, you know, it was like, you know, I had to leave school and go to their school. But so I took computers in the other school, and I had to we had to write a program on the Apple. It was Apple IIc, and I wrote a kaleidoscope program. And it was like the best one in the freaking class. I mean, I got an A, and everybody, you know, bowed down to me. But I mean, that was the only programming I did.
Kissed your ring on your pinky.
Do what?
Kissed your ring on your pinky.
Yeah, exactly.
Respect.
So, you know, but you guys got into it more than I did. I always liked the concept of programming, but I think my attention span prevented me from completing anything in depth.
Well, see, I always thought of programming as a puzzle in itself, because you got a problem that you're trying to solve, and you're kind of working the puzzle as you go to, you know, you're making the puzzle and straightening it out at the same time.
Oh, absolutely. So. Absolutely. I mean, I admire people who can program, and I think I can program, but I just haven't, you know, taken the time to really sit down. I think I'm too old now to really get into it.
There's some 60 year olds doing COBOL. Come on, man.
Yeah, okay.
Come on, you can do that.
I know. Well, I don't know. We'll see what happens. And then I also remember too, the only things I did at a programming level after like that time was hacking save games, you know, these adventure games, and Mark and I would do it a lot. We would use hex editors, you know, to pull up the save games and modify the character stats. You know,
oh yeah, give yourself gold pieces and crap.
Exactly, because you know, you'd save the game with a specific number of, you know, you knew what your numbers were, and then you, mm-hmm. you'd change something, you'd pick up some gold or do whatever, then you'd save that game, and then you'd compare the two games and find out where in the save file the differences were. And, you know, typically you could go in there to the with a hex editor and modify the numbers where they were changed. And then,
I've done that with passwords, you know,
yeah.
kind of guess, and then yeah. you look at and compare your hash with the other
yep.
hash and go, oh, yeah, yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, that's pretty cool stuff. But yeah. I don't know, man. It just seems like we've been in it for so long, doesn't it?
I know. And you know there's people that will say the same thing about their own world book, and they've been in it since the 60s.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a revolving, not revolving door. That's not what I was going to say. But yeah, it's a never-ending cycle.
Yeah, it evolves, and our kids are going to be, you know, think about when we were young and what technology we had to use, and then think, you know, now what we have, and then our kids, because I know you have a one boy, right?
Yeah, he's seven. His name's Harrison. He's seven.
Exactly. And I've got two girls, 16 and will be 13 this year. And that's a whole other topic. I mean, if you ever want to talk about that, raising two
kids. Hacking your children.
Yeah, yeah, hacking the kids. So, yeah. You know, just think what they're going to have, you know, what they're going to be dealing with too. You know, Dad, you know, put the hollow cube down. You're going to break it.
Huh? I'm trying to finally learn how to program your kid.
Yeah. I'm not gesturing correctly. Why am I? You have to, you know.
Gesture.
Yeah. That's going to be it, I think. And then, you know, I won't have the right implants, you know. You know, you don't have the Mark IV implant, Dad, like I do. Sorry. You know.
I started getting this vision like in Back to the Future where they had two ties on. And
right.
Dad.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, let's wrap this up, and maybe we'll get on here and do it again.
I'd love to.
Maybe we'll get Mark on here.
Yeah, we could. Yeah, that would be good.
All right. Well, listen, everybody, we appreciate your support, and thanks for listening to us yammer on for almost an hour. If you like the show, there are many ways to show your love. Call the listener line at 206-222-CHAT. That's 2428. And you can also email Chuck and I at technorama@chuckchat.com. Or you can visit the website at chuckchat.com for all the forms, swag, webcams, and all that good stuff. And where you want to plug your where you work, where your company?
That'd be great. Thank you. I work at Carolina IT Services, and that number is 704-307-4374. And we do small businesses. So if you have a network that needs some help, we'd be happy to help you out. Give us a call. Cool.
What if they're in California?
Well, you still call me. You can still call. I don't care where you're calling from.
Yeah.
You call me up and we'll talk.
So there you go. All right. Well, this show is a member of Friends in Tech. You can find out more of them at friendsintech.com. And we're also a member of Farpoint Media. And you can go over there and find tons of shows over at farpointmedia.net. Be sure to tell a friend about Technorama. And, Fred, give everybody a big binary high five.
101.
There you go. There you go. Man, that was like pulling teeth.
It was. Well, I'm not like you, man.
Yeah.